devotee. How, Baba, can we progress in devotion? Sai Baba, quote, "There are different modes of devotion. That which foolishly weeps for me when I am not physically present, that which surrenders to me with wild abandon, and that which is steady and strong, ever attached to my will. I accept all these forms of devotion. The choice between one or the other is not yours, for it is I who rules your feelings, modifies them. If you try to go where I do not will, I will stop you. You can do nothing apart from my will. Be assured of that. This is the highest devotion." End quote. Devotee: "So what remains for me to do?" Sai Baba, quote, "What makes you think that doing is so important? Be equal-minded. Then you will not be bothered about doing or not doing, success or failure. The balance will remain unaffected by either. Let the wave of memory, the storm of desire, the fire of emotion pass through without affecting your equanimity. Be a witness of these. Commitment engenders holding, narrowing, limiting. Be willing to be nothing. Let all dualities subside in your neutrality." End quote. Devotee: "Yes, Baba, but when it is pain that one has to endure." Sai Baba, quote, "Do you think that I would confront you with pain were there not a reason for it? Open your heart to pain as you do now for pleasure, for it is my will, wrought by me for your good. Welcome it as a challenge. Do not turn away from it. Do not listen to your mind, for mind is but another word for need. The mind engenders need. It manifested as this world because it needed this. It is all my plan to drive you by the pangs of unfulfilled need to listen to my voice, which, when heard, dissolves the ego and the mind with it." End quote. Devotee: "Baba, I crave your darshan, blessing conferred by being in the presence of a holy man. Tell me where you go to and when." Sai Baba, quote, "I want you to pass beyond these criteria and wait in readiness and yet with uncertainty. Location is limitation. Let events manifold themselves. Be willing to be led by me as I choose." End quote. Devotee: "But being so full of defects, how can we rise up to those high expectations?" Sai Baba, quote, "Your deficiencies make you need me and curb the arrogance of your mind. They are there on purpose as instruments to prod you on. Through them, I am making you want me. The feeling of separation is just a trick of your mind. You form conclusions. They become beliefs. They shape your activities and attitudes." End quote. Devotee: "It is hard to undergo your tests." Sai Baba, quote, "It is like baking a cake. I stir, I knead, I pound, I twist, I bake you. I drown you in tears, I scorch you in sobs, I make you sweet and crisp, an offering worthy of God. I have come to reform you. My plan is to transmute you into a successful sadhaka, spiritual aspirant. I won't leave you until I do that. Even if you stray away before you become that, I will hold on to you. You cannot escape from me. End quote. Devotee, you are so compassionate. Sai Baba, quote, there is nothing I do not see, nowhere I do not know the way. My sufficiency is unconditional, independent of everything. I am the totality, all of it. End quote. Devotee, how then can we aspire for your grace? Sai Baba, quote, I do not ask for perfect concentration or full renunciation. I ask only for love, love that sees me and serves me in all beings. I ask only that you turn to me when your mind drags you into grief or pride or envy. Bring me the depths of your minds, no matter how grotesque, how cruelly ravaged by doubts or disappointments. I know how to treat them. I will not reject you. I am your mother. No matter where you go, I am there. I can work with you everywhere. End quote. Devotee, I clamor for darshan, but you ask me to leave for my home across the seas. Sai Baba, quote, those who think that I am this outer form need me far more than you do. Their faith is more insecure and often not at all. Their confusion arises from the habit of their minds depending on external conditions and drawing its sense of security from those external conditions. End quote. Devotee, Baba, however inadequate, I ask just this boon. Make me your instrument. Sai Baba, quote, all are my instruments. Perhaps you believe that I choose. This one is good, that one is worse, etc. No, either will do. My will is the source of all that is and happens. It interpenetrates everything and acts. It includes everything. Finally, let me tell you this. My will is that you should manifest my will in you and through you. End quote. The following is a quotation from Satya Sai Baba on social life and atmic sadhana. Quote, what have sociology or the social sciences to do with the sciences of the spirit, or the inquiry into the human spirit? This is a question that is commonly raised. So too, many ask, what has the spiritual student in sadhaka, spiritual aspirant, to do with society and its problems? It must be said that both these attitudes are wrong. No society can find its fulfillment, no social ideal can fructify without the blossoming of the spirit of man. Mankind cannot realize the divinity whose expression it is without careful and constant attention being paid to the cultivation of the spirit. How else can this divinity express itself than in and through individuals? We can apprehend only the transitory world, this moving, inconstant fantasia. We cannot see or hear, smell or taste or touch the director of the fantasia, God. In the same manner, we can apprehend the individual, but not the entity named society. For society is no separate, distinct complex formed out of elemental components. society is the divine proliferation produced by the will supreme. Man is mortal, dust he is, and to dust returneth. But in him there shines the Atma as a spark of the immortal flame. This is not a term of flattery invented by the Vedantists. The Atma is the source, the sustenance of every being and every organization of beings. It is the one and only source, substance, and sustenance. The Atma is God. The particular is universal, no less. Therefore, recognize in each being, in each man, a brother, the child of God, and ignore all limiting thoughts and prejudices based on status, color, class, nativity, and caste. Sai is ever engaged in warning you and guiding you so that you may think, speak, and act in this attitude of love. Society cannot justify itself by planning to divide the spoils gained from nature either in equal shares or unequal shares. The consummation that must inspire society has to be the establishment and elaboration in every social act and resolution of the knowledge of the one universal Atma and the bliss that that knowledge confers. Sai does not direct, quote, "The Atma has no death, therefore kill the physical sheaths, the bodies," unquote. No, Sai does not encourage wars. Sai directs you to recognize the Atma as your closest kin, closer than the members of your family, your blood relations, and your dearest descendants. When this is done, you will nevermore stray from the path of right, which alone can maintain that kinship. Familial attachment operates even against the performance of one's legitimate duties, but attachment to the divine fills that duty with a new dedication, which ensures both joy and success. It activates man as nothing else can. It confers on him, during the process of doing his duty, the highest wisdom. Hence the advice, do not enter the objective world in the hope of realizing the Atma. Enter the objective world after becoming aware of the Atma, for then you see nature in a new light, and your very life becomes a long festival of love. There are many who use their scholarship and intelligence, even Vedic scholarship, in dreary debate and competitive display. They are enamored of their petty triumphs. They declare that society is an arena for winning such triumphs. But Sai calls on you to seek and strengthen another type of society, where there is no room for such trivial desires. Disputative Vedic scholars crave the fruits of their endeavors and efforts through ritual. Nature does not crave so. The clouds bring rain as an homage to God, who is their Lord, but they attribute it to the efficiency of their rites and use it to inflate their egos. They play about among the far-spreading branches of the tree of desire. They are entangled in the coils of the three ropes, the tamasic, the rajasic, and the sattvic. You have to go beyond the three ropes, the three bonds. You have to be ever in the unchanging, eternal truth. You must be established in the One, as the One, with no trace or taste of two. Earning and garnering should not interest you. You must not be caught in the pursuit of yaga, outer directed activity, and kshema, possessiveness, for you are full already and have no wants. The ideal of a high standard of living instead of a high level of living has played havoc with human society. A high level of living insists on morality, humility, detachment, compassion. So the competitive greed for luxury and conspicuous consumption receives no encouragement and will be destroyed. Now man is the slave of his desires. He finds himself helpless to conquer the thirst for pleasure and luxury. He is too weak to keep his nature under control. He does not know how to arouse the divine consciousness that is latent in him. Mere moral practices or instruction cannot help you to achieve this. It can be done only by spiritual sadhana, spiritual work, for it is a basic transformation. It involves the elimination of the mind, which is the arch obstacle in the path. Grace of God, if invoked and won, can endow you with the power, and the grace is available within you, awaiting the call. Man must give up reliance on the vagaries of the mind. He must act ever in the consciousness of his innate divinity. When that is done, his threefold nature, composed of the gunas, qualities, tamasic, rajasic, and sattvic, will automatically express itself through only holy channels. That is the genuine manifestation. Another point. The argument may be raised, if one has to give up the desire for comfort, luxury, and pleasure, why should one be embroiled in society? This presupposes the belief that society is justified only by the provision of such worldly joys. But what kind of society can one build on such slender foundations? If built, it can be a society only in name. It will not be bound by mutual love and cooperation. The strong will suppress the weak. Social relations will be marred by discontent. Even when attempts are made to divide the resources of nature equally among all, the cordiality will be only on the surface. It will not be spontaneous. We can limit the resources available, but we cannot limit greed, desire, and craving. Desire involves seeking beyond the limits of possibility. What has to be done is to pluck out desire by the roots. Man must give up the desire for objective pleasure based on the illusion that the world is many, manifold, multicolored, etc., and not on the truth that the world, nature, all creation is one. When one is conscious only of the one, who desires what? What can be acquired and enjoyed by the second person? The atmic vision destroys the desire for objective joys, for there is no object distinct from the subject. This is the true function of society, to enable every member to realize this atmic vision. The men and women bound by mutual interests in a society are not merely families, castes, classes, groups, or kinsmen and kinswomen. They are one atma. They are knit by the closest of family ties. Not only the one society to which they feel they are bound, but all mankind is one. The Shastras declare the whole world is one family. This unity must be experienced by everyone. Natural resources and wealth are now being misused for the boosting of one's ego. But when the atmic unity is realized, they will promote the new way of life through love. What is now mercy or legally enforced mutual help will then be transformed into divine love that can effectively purify the recipient and the giver. This consummation is beyond the region of common politics, ethics, or economics. they cannot transform the receiver and thrill the giver, however much they attempt to equalize. They do not have the appeal, and they have no power to sustain. The equality they establish will be haunted by a shadow, the shadow of the ego. This shadow can disappear only when identity as one is known and felt. It may be said that not all desires are wrong. The rajasic ones, which harm and exploit others, can be condemned. But why renounce the sattvic desires? But desire is desire, though the object may be beneficial and pure. The fruit of effort, the mind that seeks it, the vitality that activates the mind, life itself, every one of these has to be turned toward the Lord with devotion born out of the vision of the One. Those who argue that the spiritual path is for the individual only and that the society should not be involved in it are committing a great mistake. It is like insisting that there should be light inside the house and saying that it does not matter if there is darkness outside. Devotion towards God goes ill with hatred towards fellow man. Fellow men in the world must be seen ever in the mirror of existence, knowledge, bliss, the supreme state. Kinship, based on this recognition, will alone last. That is the Sai kinship. When you deepen that kinship, the true presence, the constant presence of Satya Sai will be yours. Do not be led away by your fancies into the jungle of words and feelings. Be firm, true to your innermost nature. Good and evil are based on the reactions of individuals. They are not inherent in things or events. Vedanta or atheism is accepted or rejected when one likes or dislikes it. They do not depend on logical acceptance or rejection. Only experience can establish their validity. Who can delineate godhood as thus and thus? Those who do so are indulging in a futile exercise. They have no authority for declaring it. If they claim the right, they are but conceited people relying on their limited intellects. Divinity is fully immanent in everyone. It is patent for the eyes that can see clearly and deeply. Whoever denies this is only cheating himself of his reality. He cannot dismiss it by denial, either from himself or others. The conclusion, therefore, is inevitable, that it is the duty of man to see in society the expression of divinity, and to use all his skill and effort to promote the welfare and prosperity of society. Man must cultivate this expansive feeling, this inclusive thinking, and this intuitive vision. Without these three, man is but an inert being. If he derides these three, he loses his title to be human. The spirit of renunciation, adherence to virtue, the eagerness to cooperate, the sense of kinship, these are the characteristic signs of man. Life, which considers these as encumbrances, cannot be valued as life. The brotherhood of man can be translated into life only on the basis of the Atmic vision. All men thirst for peace, happiness, and bliss. They are the precious heritage which is man's right, for they are God's treasure. They can be earned only by recognizing the bond that knits man to man. All men are of one lineage. They are of divine lineage. All men are cells in the one divine organism, in the divine body. That should be your faith, your fortune, your fort, your fullness. Awareness of this alone gives you the right to call yourself a man. Learn to live as men. This is the sadhana. This is the message of Sai. End quotation. The following is a series of maxims by Satya Sai Baba. 1. Prema, love, should be considered as the very breath of life. 2. More than all other forms of prema, man's first effort should be to fix his love on the Lord. 3. Such love, directed toward God, is bhakti, devotion. That is the fundamental test, the acquisition of bhakti. 4. Those who seek the bliss of the Atma, the soul, the spark of God within, should not run after the joys of the sense objects. 5. Satya, truth, must be treated as life-giving, as breathing itself. 6. Just as a body that has no breath is useless and begins to rot and stink within a few minutes, similarly, life without truth is useless and becomes the stinking abode of strife and grief. 7. Believe that there is nothing greater than truth, nothing more precious, nothing sweeter, and nothing more lasting. 8. Truth is the all-protecting God. There is no mightier guardian than truth. 9. The Lord, who is the embodiment of truth, grants his darshan, blessing of visualizing the Lord, to those of truthful speech and loving heart. 10. Have undiminished kindness toward all beings and also the spirit of self-sacrifice. 11. You must also possess control of the senses, an unruffled character, and non-attachment. 12. Be always on the alert against the four sins which the tongue is prone to commit: speaking falsehood, speaking ill of others, backbiting, and talking too much. It is best to attempt to control these tendencies. 13. Try to prevent the five sins that the body commits: killing, adultery, theft, drinking intoxicants, and the eating of flesh. It is a great help for the highest life if these also are kept as far away as possible. 14. One must be always vigilant, without a moment's carelessness, against the eight sins that the mind perpetrates: craving, anger, greed, attachment, impatience, hatred, egoism, pride. Man's primary duty is to keep all these things at a safe distance from himself. 15. Man's mind speeds fast, pursuing wrong actions. Without letting it hurry like that, remember the name of the Lord at such a time, or attempt to do some good or other. Those who do thus will certainly become fit for the Lord's grace. 16. First, give up the evil tendencies to feel impatient at the prosperity of others and the desire to harm them. Be happy that others are happy. Sympathize with those who are in adversity and wish for their prosperity. That is the goal of cultivating the love of God. 17. Patience is all the strength that man needs. 18. Those anxious to live in joy must always be doing good. 19. It is easy to conquer anger through love, attachment through reasoning, falsehood through truth, bad thoughts through good, and greed through charity. 20. No reply should be given to words of the wicked. Be at a great distance from them. That is for your good. Break off all relations with such people. 21. Seek the company of good men, even at the sacrifice of your honor and life. But be praying to God to bless you with the discrimination needed to distinguish between the good men and the bad. Use the intellect given to you for such discrimination as well. 22. Those who conquer states and earn fame in the world are hailed as heroes, no doubt. But those who have conquered the senses are heroes who must be acclaimed as the conquerors of the universal. 23. Whatever acts a good or bad man may do, the fruits thereof follow him and will never stop pursuing him. 24. Greed yields only sorrow. Contentment is best. There is no happiness greater than contentment. 25. The mischief-mongering tendency should be plucked out by the roots and thrown off. If allowed to exist, it will undermine life itself. 26. Bear with fortitude both loss and grief. Try to search for plans to achieve joy and gain. 27. Assume silence when you are invaded by anger, or remember the name of the Lord instead. Do not remind yourself of things which will inflame the anger more. That will do incalculable harm. 28. From this moment, avoid all bad habits. Do not delay or postpone. They do not contribute the least joy. 29. Try as far as possible within your means to satisfy the needs of the poor, who are really God's poor. Share with them whatever food you have, and make them happy at least that once. 30. Whatever you feel should not be done to you by others, you should avoid doing to others. 31. For faults and sins committed in ignorance, repent sincerely. Try not to repeat the faults and sins again. Pray to God to bless you with the strength and the courage needed to stick to the right path. 32. Yield not to cowardice. Do not give up Ananda bliss. 33. Do not allow anything to come near you which will destroy your eagerness and enthusiasm for God. Want of eagerness will cause the decay of the strength of man. 34. Do not get swelled up when people praise you, and do not feel dejected when people blame you. 35. If your friends hate one another and start a quarrel, do not attempt to inflame them more and make them hate each other more. Try, on the other hand, with love and sympathy, to restore their former friendship. 36. Instead of searching for others' faults, search for your own faults. Uproot them, throw them off. It is enough if you search and discover one fault of yours. That is better than discovering tens of hundreds of faults of others. 37. Even if you cannot or will not do any good deed, do not conceive or carry out any bad deed. 38. whatever people may say about the faults that you know are not in you, do not feel for it. As for the faults that are in you, try to correct them yourself, even before others point them out to you. Do not harbor anger or vengeance against persons who point out your faults. Do not retort by pointing out the faults of those persons themselves, but show your gratitude to them. Trying to discover their faults is a greater mistake on your part. It is good for you to know your faults. It is no good your knowing others' faults. 39. Whenever you get a little leisure, do not spend it in talking about sundries, but utilizing it in meditating on God or in doing service to others. 40. The Lord is understood only by the devotee. The devotee is understood only by the Lord. Others cannot understand them. So do not discuss matters relating to the Lord with those who have no devotion. On account of such discussions, your devotion will diminish. 41. If anyone speaks to you on any subject, having understood it wrongly, do not think of other wrong notions which will support that stand, but grasp only the good and the sweet in what he says. True meaning is to be appreciated as desirable, not wrong meaning or many meanings, which give no meaning at all and cause only the hampering of Ananda bliss. 42. If you desire to cultivate one-pointedness, do not, when in a crowd or bazaar, scatter your vision to the four corners and on everything, but see only the road in front of you, just enough to avoid accidents in yourself. One-pointedness will become firmer if one moves about without taking one's attention off the road, avoiding dangers, and not casting eyes on others' forms. 43. Give up all doubts regarding the Guru and God. If your worldly desires do not get fulfilled, do not blame it on your devotion. There is no relationship between such desires and devotion to God. These worldly desires have to be given up someday or other. Bhakti feelings have to be acquired someday or other. Be firmly convinced of this. 44. If your meditation or recitation of the name of God do not progress properly, or if the desires you have entertained do not come to fruition, do not get dispirited with God. It will dispirit you even more, and you will lose the peace, however small or big, that you might have earned. During meditation and recitation of the name of God, you should not be dispirited, desperate, or discouraged. When such feelings come, take it that it is the fault of your spiritual work, and endeavor to do it correctly. It is only when, in your daily conduct and in all actions, you authentically behave and act in this manner and along these lines that you can attain the divine principle very easily. Therefore, hold on to these maxims firmly. End of maxims.